The commentary of Sridhar Swami, these verses, or that verse, 11, 14, 15, Sridhar Swami says that when Lord Krishna in the Bhagavatam spoke this verse, he spoke it to Uddhava, it's part of the Uddhava Gita, he meant to say that no one is as dear to me as my devotee. These people, Shiva, Brahma, and Lakshmi, none of them are as dear to me as my devotee. But because he was with Uddhava, and Uddhava is such a great devotee, and they have such a loving relationship, instead of saying, Bhakta, my devotee, he said, Bhavan, you. It was like a transcendental slip of the tongue. Actually, Sridhar Swami says, it is intended for Uddhava. But what it's intended, excuse me, for the devotees in general. And therefore, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, if you have a look through, you'll see that the Lord, that the verse is applied to Prahlad also, to express the glorious position of Prahlad, the same verse. But because it is really intended for the devotees, but of the devotees, Uddhava is the highest. So it was particularly applied to Uddhava. And then Uddhava, Krishna describes how Uddhava has got the greatest mercy. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way. Yes. Because he's never affected by the modes of nature. So Narada, glorifying Uddhava like this, he's just overwhelmed. So then Uddhava, this is now, let's see, point four. Uddhava, who happened to be there, although Narada hadn't noticed, got up and with great respect embraced Narada's feet. He started crying. And he says that, doesn't quite come out here but in the book, but he actually says that what you're saying, that you are all knowing, so what you're saying is true. I have got the most mercy and I know I have. But then he starts immediately, without any discussion about his mercy, the mercy he got or didn't get, or the various reasons. Immediately he switches over to people who are greater recipients of mercy. Immediately. Practically after one or two sentences. We're now, let's see. Well, this whole section is from 19 to 27 in the book. And it includes, in the book, 4, 5, and 6. Uddhava is now going to explain who he feels has really got the mercy. So he says, in my recent trip to Vraja, what I saw took my pride and my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Since then I've understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, and of those who possess that love. Just by what I saw in Vraja, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, a recipient of his most extreme mercy. So in other words, he is immediately saying, in different ways, from verse 19 to verse 27, points 4, 5, and 6 in your overview books, that actually, oh, and even 7 for that matter in the overview book, yeah, that actually it's the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and particularly it's the gopis. But at this point, it's like all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, actually. They have got the most mercy. However, point 7 explains, Uddhava was afraid to describe the glory of the gopis in detail, because if somehow Krishna heard it, Krishna's still sleeping, remember, like in the next room, it's midday. But if Krishna hears this, then he'll just, you know, he's already bad enough. We don't know what's going to happen if he hears about this, about the gopis. So then, now, this is point 8. Verse 28 to verse 41. Yeah. Rohini is now going to talk about the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And she is, in a sense, going to contradict Uddhava. Uddhava is going to say that I saw, you know, such good fortune that my pride for being fortunate, in being fortunate, was just crushed to dust. So Rohini explains. Well, she sort of contradicts what he says, but at the same time we can understand that she is fulfilling the inner meaning. Because she says they've got no mercy at all. Look at these poor people. They're practically dead. It's just hopeless. How could you say they've got mercy? She says, alas, dear servant of Sri Hari, the residents of Raja have, by evil fate, been all but slain. They have lost the last trace of good fortune and are drowning in an ocean of gloom. In other words, there's so much in the ecstasy of separation in Krishna Prema that is just like superhuman. This is the inner meaning. But on the surface, she's saying, what is their good fortune? They have just lost everything. More than everything. They're just finished. The cries of Yashoda made even rocks shed tears and lightning bolts shatter. And who can allow the mouth to speak about the other women who, after Krishna left, became like living corpses? That goes through to, 41. Oh, she says, when I told Krishna about this, all he did was send a messenger. Yes, all he did was send a messenger. And it didn't help at all. So where's his mercy? Where's his mercy? So Krishna has forgotten them. He's just doing nothing for them. So where's his mercy? But internally she's acknowledging they have the greatest mercy. So now, verse 42 to 45, Padmavati speaks. She is sort of like comic relief, because it can get a little heavy here. All the separation and the tears and extreme emotions. So Padmavati, she is kind of a little nutty. In fact, she's quite nutty. She is the mother of Kamsa. And what happened was that she is the wife of Ugrasena, who is the king of Dwaraka, in fact. He is the head. Krishna is under him. So one time she was at her father's home after they were married, but she went back to spend a little time with her parents, and she was there. And one demon named Drumila came and assumed the form of her husband. and seduced her. And because he was a demon, the child that came out was a demon, Kamsa. And from that point, she lost it and became this kind of cranky, kooky old lady. So, Shri Shri Radha Radhanath Ki. So she, anyway, I'll just read what she says. It is rather intriguing. Just see, since childhood, our Krishna, in the forest full of thorns, has guarded the cows of these merciless cowherds. They never even gave him shoes. And when, tormented by hunger, he sometimes ate a little butter, they punished him by tying him up. And they scolded him abusively. Because he was young, Krishna had no choice but to tolerate all this pain. But what does he have to do for these people now? In other words, yeah, it's their problem. They deserve it. They mistreated him. So then, Rohini speaks. And her idea, she is now reiterating her point, which is Krishna's forgotten the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He's forgotten them. He doesn't think about them any longer. And then, let's see, where are we here? Oh, that was point 10. Then point 11, Rukmini. Rukmini really understands Krishna clearly. Of course, they all do, maybe Padmavati doesn't. It's not that Rohini does not understand. She understands that this is mercy. But Rukmini understands and expresses it very clearly and openly. That you don't understand the inner feelings of Krishna at all. She's responding to Padmavati. That his heart is softer than newly churned butter. Sometimes at night, he lovingly calls his cows by name. Krishna at night. Sometimes at night, he calls his girlfriends. This is point 11, and it's going over the page. Sometimes he acts as if he's playing his flute and he assumes the threefold bending form in bed. Yes. So, it's not that he doesn't, that he feels abused by them or anything like that. It's not like that at all. And so on and so forth, things of this type. Sometimes at night he calls out to me, "Oh, Sri Radha." Sometimes he pulls on my sari at night and asks me, "Chandravali, what are you doing?" He's just in the madness of love for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Sometimes he drenches the pillow with floods of tears. Then at times he suddenly wakes up, rises from bed, and cries in a pitiful voice, drowning us in an ocean of pain. Just last night, he must have seen something in a dream, because today he's been weeping sorrowfully and is beside himself with agitation. Now he's still lying in bed as if asleep. His sheets pulled over his head. He's not even performed his morning duties. So Krishna is just so overwhelmed. We're up to about verse 54 here. Krishna's just so overwhelmed that even in his sleep, he's just going through all these things. And today, it's so much he can't get up. He's just lying there with the sheets over his head. Can you imagine? the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just loses his call. He's just lying there. So Satyabhama then speaks up. This is still point 11. And she sort of adds, she confirms what Rukmini said and adds. She said, it's not only at night, but also during the day. Sometimes he just walks up to me and says, oh, Radharani. And things like this. He's just in another world, even though he's with us. This is what you don't hear about Dwarika. You know, normally like in the Bhagavatam, you hear Krishna's the king or the prince, really. And he's doing this and doing that and doing so many things. But most of the time, he was just lost completely in separation from Vrindavan. Totally hopeless. They didn't know, you know, how are we going to get him out of bed today? How are we going to get him to the assembly hall so he can preside over the meeting? They didn't know. How are they going to do this? Prop him up, you know, keep him going somehow. You know, sometimes they do that with heads of state. The previous president of Russia, Yeltsin, he's an alcoholic. And he came, I think, to America. They had to wait 6 hours before he got off the plane because he was just too intoxicated. Totally gone. So Krishna, in a very transcendental way, was something like that. They just didn't know what to do. What's he going to do next? So then Lord Balaram spoke up, rather a little angry. This is point 12 in the book. So he's a bit angry with Krishna. And he really takes the point that Krishna is actually not being merciful. He's being deceptive. He says, you know, I went there for 2 months and I evaluated the situation very carefully, and I could see there was no solution except Krishna had to go back. That's all. Otherwise, absolutely no chance. So I came back, I informed Krishna, and he promised. Oh, he says, I promised. I promised them hundreds of times because I knew this is the only thing that would help. So when I came back, I told Krishna all of this. He immediately agreed, yes, I'll do it right away. But he didn't do it. He didn't do it. And Balaram says, you can know a person's heart from how he acts. He is acting in an unmerciful way, so he is not merciful to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So then, now let's see, where are we? Point 13. Krishna hears this, and Krishna comes out crying and crying and crying. And he says, yes. Well, it says, my heart is like thunder. But in the book it says, my heart is like diamond. You know, thunderbolt is meant to be very hard. But diamonds are even harder. They're the hardest things. So he says, my heart is just like a diamond. It's so hard. The devotees, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they looked after me for so long, but I just let them down. I just let them down. I've simply caused them distress. So, this is from 63 to 69, I think. Actually, there's a little bit missing here. It's sort of 63 to 72, but Padmavati comes forward and offers a few more, you know, interesting little tidbits. So Krishna says, he's forgotten about the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He's done nothing to help them. He's been very cruel. And he asks Uddhava, what should I do? Devaki steps forward and says, you should give them whatever they want. This all Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So we'll just finish in a minute with Padmavati. So Devaki agrees. She says, yes, you know, you've really mistreated them. You should actually give them whatever they want. Just find out what they want and give it to them, and then they'll be peaceful. So Padmavati, she sort of thinks in circles or something, I don't know how exactly to put it, but she then becomes concerned. Give them whatever they want? What if they want my husband's kingdom? She thinks. And so she then tries to offer a counter solution. She says, you know, if Nanda Maharaj felt inconvenienced by looking after Krishna and Balaram for 11 years, she says, I will tell my husband to pay Nanda Maharaj to cover the costs. In fact, I'll get him to pay double. And you can tell Nanda Maharaj that if he feels that he owes Krishna back wages from having looked after the cows for so many years, then he doesn't have to pay it. If he doesn't want to, it's all right. We will forget that. It's like a diversionary tactic. Don't tell them they can have whatever they want. Just make some offers like this, you know. We'll pay them off something. And they don't have to pay us back. Okay. So, then Krishna turns to Uddhava. This is now at verse 76. And asks Uddhava, please tell me what they want. It's going to follow now. Explore that idea. What do they want? And what can I do about it to help them and to save them? So let us finish here for tonight. And we'll carry on and we'll do our best to finish. I think we'll finish tomorrow night. Hare Krishna. And I told them that, yes, I understand you. I agree. Krishna has to come back. And when I go back to Dwarka, I'll convince him of that. And he'll be back shortly. So then Balaram said that when I went back, I made it very clear to Krishna what was the situation. That you've got to go back. You can't do anything else. Otherwise, they're all going to die. And it'll be such a huge disaster, and you'll be responsible for it. So you have to go back. And Krishna immediately said, yes, you're right. I have to go back. I must go back. And then he didn't go back. To this day, he has not gone back. So what is that? That's not mercy. That is hard-heartedness, actually. So, Rukmini and Satyabhama, they are speaking. Anyway, different than Bhakti is speaking in somewhat different ways. And then after Balaram spoke and accused Krishna of being a bit of a rascal, then Krishna woke up and came and lamented. So we finished off there. And we actually finished off with Padmavati speaking again. When Devaki said, oh no, Krishna asked Uddhava, what should I do? Just tell me, I'll do it to save the situation, save the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So Uddhava was about to answer, but then Devaki spoke up and said, you should give them whatever they want. Anything. Just do whatever it takes. Give them anything, do anything that they might ask, but somehow pacify them. So Padmavati, being, well, we all know what she's like now, this kind of weird character, she suddenly got this special inspiration that if they, you know, they, all they want is, all they wanted in the past was to abuse Krishna and get him to go out and herd the cows. So they may feel, if we ask them what they want, they may feel that they are owed something for maintaining Krishna and Balaram for 11 years. So therefore they may come and say, well, we want Dwarika then. So Padmavati said, no problem, don't worry. I'll tell my husband, Ugrasen, the king, to tell Nanda Maharaj, we will pay you back for however much it costs you to maintain Krishna. In fact, we'll pay you double. And whatever you may feel, or anyone may feel that you owe Krishna for going out every day and working for you, well, don't worry about that. If you don't want to pay it, you don't have to. So she thought, in this way we will cleverly deal with this point of what the inhabitants of Vrindavan may want. So then Krishna, as generally most people do, Krishna acted as if he was just ignoring Padmavati, and he asked Uddhava, please tell me then what they want. What is it that the inhabitants of Vrindavan want? And in other words, then I'll do it. Don't worry, I'll just do it. It's clear now, it has to be done. So then, Uddhava, this is now going on, let's see, to verse, let's see, we're about verse 76, and in the book, we are on the last page, it's the third page of chapter 6. And it's now, well, we're still in 13, actually. We're still in 13. Although I must admit that there, 13 is, well, everything is really condensed, actually. It takes us from verse 63. To verse 112. So it's like hyper condensed. We'll try and fill in some of the gaps. So you can see there in 13, at the end of 13, Krishna's asking Uddhava, tell me what I should do. Tell me what they want. So here it says that Uddhava replied that they only want you, which is what it boils down to. But what he says before that is, Uddhava is worried because he went there before. If you remember the story, just after Krishna left Vrindavan, Uddhava went there before. And he took two things with him. One was some gifts from Krishna, some necklaces and, you know, jewels and stuff. And said, give these to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and then they'll know that I haven't forgotten about them. So that was one thing. And the second thing he sent was some instructions. So Uddhava is now getting into anxiety. Oh no, he's going to send me again. He's asking what they want. So he's going to send me again with some more gifts and some more instructions. That's what he's going to do. And he's remembering the bad experience he had when he went there that first time. I mean, it was very interesting to see the elevated love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, but in terms of fulfilling his mission of satisfying the inhabitants of Vrindavan, it was a terrible failure, actually. It was a hopeless failure. They were not satisfied. So he remembers then, this is from verse 78 to 92, he remembers, I took all those jewels and I gave them to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and I said, these are from Krishna. He wanted me to give these to you, and he thought you'd be happy. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan, he was watching them. And he could see they're just looking at these things like, really? I see, okay. And that they thought that Krishna really thinks that we want things like this. He thinks we're going to be satisfied with things like this. We don't understand it. How could he think like that? We don't care. We don't care about wealth. We told him so many times. We told him. And we showed him. We showed it by the way that we lived. So what's he doing? Why has he sent us these things? And then Nanda Maharaj, he said, no. And they were thinking of just giving them back and saying, it's okay. He might need them in Mathura, because we've heard things that the cost of living is more expensive or something like that. So, but we don't need them, it's okay. We're quite happy. But then Nanda Maharaj said, no. Don't give them back. Keep them. Because Krishna, he promised he'd come back. So I'm sure he'll be back very soon. So when he comes, we should all wear these things. And then Krishna will be pleased that we have appreciated his gifts. So we should do like that. So then, that was the first part. Then the second part was the message. You know, if the jewels, the gifts were a flop, the message was a disaster. Krishna said, it says there that they almost died with disappointment when they heard the message. For example, he said, you're never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Just as the elements of nature, ether, air, fire, water, and earth, are present in every created thing, so I am present within everyone's mind, life, air, and senses, and also within the physical elements and the modes of material nature. So when Uddhava told them that and other things like that, then they thought, who does he think we are? Does he think we're just some mental speculators or something? We love him. We don't need to hear some impersonal gyan. We don't want that. We want him. We want to serve him. So, that, as we said, brought them practically to the point of death. That Krishna, he thinks that this is good enough for us. He thinks this is the right thing for us. Some word jugglery, that he's here, he's there, he's everywhere, so it's fine. He thinks that's what we want. Oh, what's happened to him? What's happened to us? So they almost died of disappointment. So Uddhava tried to convince them, it's okay, it's no problem. Don't worry, he'll be back. So some of them took vows like, I will look down the road coming in from Mathura into Vrindavan. I will look down the road until Krishna comes without blinking. Things like this. So they're there just. So then it says, they then attained an amazing state of renunciation and fixedness on Krishna's return. And when Uddhava saw this, how they were just so fixed on Krishna and dedicated to Krishna and loved Krishna to the total, absolute exclusion of anything or anyone else, Uddhava was astonished. And then the feelings that he had had before, that, oh yes, I have great good fortune. I'm with Krishna all the time. As we discussed yesterday, Uddhava feeds Krishna. He goes with him everywhere. And he massages Krishna's feet when Krishna is taking rest and falls asleep with the Lord's feet on his lap. So Uddhava says that at that point now, here, seeing all this in Vrindavan, that sense he had that, oh yes, I'm very fortunate. Just see all the nice exchanges I have with Krishna and all the intimacy I have with Krishna. I'm so fortunate. So he says, that feeling that I was fortunate was ground into dust when I saw this, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis. So when that happened, he says, then I felt, now I'm really fortunate. Now I've really got good fortune. So then, let's see. Well, we're still in 13, sort of. I mean, in effect. Yeah, so Uddhava has just explained now what they want. You know, they don't want me with any more gifts or any more explanations or, you know, comforting, so-called comforting words. They don't want that. They want you. And that's it. That's the only thing which will work. So now we're at around verses 93 to 98. Krishna becomes indecisive. It's not mentioned in the overview book, but after Uddhava has explained all this, then Krishna becomes indecisive. He gets up like he's thinking, right, I'm going. But then he sees Devaki and Rukmini. They're feeling, oh no, he's going to go. We're going to lose him. Just think what happened to them, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when they lost Krishna. Well, it looks like we're going to lose Krishna now. Because for sure, when he goes back there, he won't come back here. So they started getting into this anxiety. Krishna saw that. He was just about to go. Krishna saw that, so he thought, oh. Then he said, pass me a piece of paper and a pen. I think I may write another message. Actually. But then he saw Uddhava was looking at him like, what? You're not serious. Or like, no. And Uddhava just begged him, just go, please, just go. Otherwise they won't survive. So then Padmavati speaks up. She says, I've got it. I've figured it out. Now I understand exactly what's going on. Okay, I've got it. She says, these bridge buses have been regularly sending milk products from Vrindavan to Dwarka and bribing Uddhava. That's what it is. They have been bribing him so that he will arrange that Krishna comes back. That's what it is. Because it must be so difficult to get free labor, someone to look after the cows, go out in the sun, tread on all the thorns. After all, they wouldn't even give him shoes. So, they're feeling they want him back because they need free labor again. Yes. So, Rohini, generally, they just ignore Padmavati when she says these crazy things. But Rohini then responds and says, look, the thing is, actually they love him. And even if he's, when he was out herding the cows, even if they couldn't see him for 1 second, it was too much for them. They felt they were going to die. Night, when they had to sleep at night, and they couldn't see him till the next morning, you think they slept? None of them ever slept at all. They were just thinking, you know, looking at their watches. Oh, you know, 6 hours and 5 minutes and 30 seconds to go. 6 hours and 5 minutes and 25 seconds to go. Or something like that. That's all. All night they're thinking, when? Well, I see Krishna. How long will it take watching? Has the moon moved at all? So it seemed like just a millennium. And when he went out herding the cows, then it was ecstatic. They loved it. The cows loved it. He loved it. The cowherd boys loved it. It was not dangerous. It was not difficult. They didn't even herd the cows, they just played, and the cows just followed them wherever they went. So all these things you're saying, it just doesn't make sense. They love Krishna. That's why they want him back. Padmavati, it's almost her final words. She says, well, that's not what I heard. I heard that the cows are almost dead because no one's taking them out. Yes, that's what I heard. Because no one can do anything because Krishna's gone. So everyone is just like, they're paralyzed. So no one's taking the cows out. And the cows are not happy. Yes. So then, this brings us actually to point 14, which is from verse 113 to verse 122. So Krishna, having heard of this, thinking how bad things are in Vrindavan, Krishna, it says, scorching anxiety dried up Krishna's face, and his heart filled with dread, fearful for the lives of the bridge busses. Then he looked at Balaram, wanting some comfort or something. But he saw Balaram was just crying and crying. Suddenly Balaram was crying uncontrollably. He told Krishna. It's here, yes, in number 14. That, what to speak of the people there? Even the rivers and the mountains, and what to speak even of the animals, even the rivers and the mountains, they're just dead. And even the rocks, it's just everything is finished completely because you're not there. Then he said, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, that they are lamenting so much that Krishna drove away that Kaliya serpent. So now the Yamuna is no longer poisonous. That's terrible. That's very bad. We wish the Kaliya serpent was still there. Then we just go and jump in the Yamuna and die. That's all. That'd be so good. And he told Krishna that if you don't give your mercy to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, then all that will be left is for Lord Yamaraj to give his mercy. That's all. They'll just die. So Krishna becomes so overwhelmed, he embraces Balaram. This is now verse 123 or so to 125, the very end of the chapter. Krishna and Balaram just roll on the floor, totally overwhelmed with lamentation, till they fall unconscious. Then everyone else just cries and cries in the palace. And then all the people outside in the city of Dwarka, they hear all the screaming and screaming. So they all start screaming also. And this brings us into chapter 7. The sound of this crying and screaming goes up through the universe, and Lord Brahma hears it. So Lord Brahma becomes concerned. What's going on down there in Dwarika? So, accompanied by all sorts of important people riding on Garuda, accompanied by the personified Vedas and various great saintly persons and, you know, quite an entourage, Lord Brahma came. So now here, in chapter, in the overview book, there is a lengthy sort of precy of this chapter 7. And I'm going to go through it maybe slightly more quickly than we have done. So, anyway, we'll try and follow as much as we can through this, but we may sort of skip over some things because this is the longest chapter and there's quite a bit in it. So, the first point, number one, is from verse 1 to 9, how Brahma comes, and, well, first of all, up in Brahma Loka, the sound of the screaming and crying went all over the entire universe. So in Brahma Loka, Lord Brahma heard it, so he came. So he was looking at the situation and thinking what to do. Then he had an idea. We will create another Vrindavan, new Vrindavan, outside Vrindavan. Yes, we will create a replica of Vrindavan right here, right next to Dwarika. And in this way, then we'll take Krishna there and, you know, we'll set it up so it looks just practically, I mean, quite like the real thing. Mother Yashoda will be there, Nanda Maharaj. The gopis will be there, but they'll all be deities, statues. However, we will have some real cows. So, you know, it'll be quite like. And then the river Yamuna, Dwarka is by the sea. So the sea will be the river Yamuna. And like this, it will be quite like Vrindavan. And Krishna, you know, when he gets into these moods, he just, you know, he's not really so, like, keenly aware of exactly what's going on. So it'll probably work. And then Krishna will be okay. So, quickly, Vishvakarma created new Vrindavan, right next door, right next door. And then Brahma told Garuda, all right, there, see, Krishna and Balaram, they're just lying on the floor unconscious. Pick them up and take them to new Vrindavan. So he wanted to tell Garuda that, but Garuda was too bewildered. He was just looking. So Lord Brahma had to eventually shout at him. And then Garuda realized, oh, yes, okay. So he went and he picked up Krishna and Balaram and took them to new Vrindavan. This is now, let's see. This is number 2 in the overview book. So they were unconscious. But on the way, Lord Balaram started to regain consciousness. So, and Balaram, by the time we get to number 3, which goes from verse 12 to verse 33 in the book, then Balaram is conscious. They have arrived in New Vrindavan. Balaram is conscious. And he understands what the plan is. So quickly, he dresses himself. You know, he sort of hitches up his dhoti, cowgirl boy style, like shorts, and takes the heavy jewelry off and things like that, puts a peacock feather in and a few flowers and leaves and stuff, and dresses Krishna in the same way, and puts a flute through Krishna's waistband, and then he thinks, okay, we're ready now, I'll wake him up. Now, while this has been happening, some of the other inhabitants of Dwarka, these main ones, Devaki, Rukmini, Rohini, Satyabhama, even Padmavati actually, they all came over to New Vrindavan. Lord Brahma told them, come on, come and watch this. Come and see what happens. Why? The reason is, he wants to help them to advance in Krishna consciousness by actually seeing what it is which affects Krishna so much. Because as we mentioned yesterday, I think, that, you know, they had to live through this, you know, like every day it was like a full-scale performance with Krishna, just going totally off the deep end all the time. So now Brahma wanted to help them to understand why it's like that. In other words, who are these inhabitants of Vrindavan? And what are the relationships that they have with Krishna and that Krishna has with them, which just does so much to Krishna? So Brahma said, you come and watch, but stay behind the trees. Don't let him see you. Otherwise, he'll wonder what you're doing in Vrindavan. So they went and they hid and they watched as Lord Balaram started to bring Krishna back to consciousness. And Narada was feeling so bad. Look at all the chaos that I've created. I came in here talking about the greatest mercy. Uddhava started talking about it. Krishna, now Krishna's just become too overwhelmed. Everyone's overwhelmed. What's going to happen? And it's all my fault. So Narada was hanging back. Actually, he was up in the sky, watching, sort of in the distance a little, just watching, feeling embarrassed that he was responsible for all this calamity and disturbance. So then, now we're sort of in the middle of number three. Yeah. Balaram wakes up Krishna. Come on. We have to herd the cows. Look, the cowherd boy is awaiting there. See? Sridhar just wants to go. They're all statues. Deities. And look at your parents. They're so filled with love for you. They can't even speak. And look at the gopis, they're just laughing at you. You've overslept. You've slept for too long. So, finally Krishna came back to consciousness, saying, Shiva, Shiva, and got up very surprised. And he went. Let's see. Yeah, it explains there actually in number three about two-thirds of the way down, Krishna woke up and, opening his eyes, saw Nanda Maharaj and offered his obeisances, then told his mother, oh, what a dream I had. You wouldn't believe it. See, I had this dream that I left Vrindavan
and I went to Mathura, and I fought so many kings, and then I went to Dwarka. Would you believe it? That's amazing. And then I built a city at Dwarka, and I fought so many kings. Oh, what an amazing dream. Then he sees Balaram, because Balaram is alive. Balaram is looking at him. And Krishna thinks, oh, Balaram is confused now about my dream. So he says, don't worry, Balaram, I'll explain later about the dream. So then,